in the global south itself, like the access to a gynecologist is understood to be a privilege. And it is something that you only access when you have like a quote unquote real problem with you.
Or you have your deliveries and the pregnancy.
Yeah,
That's,
that's the only two times you would go to a gynecologist. which is so interesting when a lot of the symptoms of menopause or people going women going through menopause should reach out to, because there is a lot happening within their bodies.
I would say that if I should be humbled by this, but I did have access in my country to a gynecologist, and I did visit when I started with my perimenopause. And I tell you, there's no advice, no guidance, except that you can come back again when your menopause actually starts, and fewer vitamins that you can, the calcium that normally they recommend for your bones. So, other than this, there was no information, no guidance, no follow-up actually. And I'm talking about a very metro city that we have in India, Chandigarh, that I belong to. That's the capital city of a state, of two states actually. So a good gynecologist in Chandigarh has no advice, no guidance whatsoever for a perimenopausal woman. So that's really strange and surprising and disgusting at the same time.
And I can assure you, it's the case with a lot of cities here too, unfortunately. However bad that might sound, the access to equitable and good healthcare for people
Is
is
a
a big
dream.
issue.
It's a dream,
It's a
actually.
dream, actually. So yeah, true. And especially for like aging related like issues is something that needs to be front and center. But yeah, Robin, do you have any thoughts before we delve more into other things?
I've lots of thoughts all the time.
That's really
So
good.
thanks for asking. One of those things is that women are not the standard measure for any kind of study. You know, it's always based on how does this affect the male body? How does this affect the male psychology? How does this affect the male emotionality or whatever it is, right? And so for women and women's issues, and I think this goes all the way through the start of menses, through pregnancy, through what childbirth and postpartum does to women's psychology and physical health, and all the way up to menopause. It's just one of those things that is so vastly misunderstood through lack of study, because it's a lack of interest. You
Absolutely.
know, and if we put, women of color on top of that, then it becomes exponentially more misunderstood, because people are having even less access to healthcare, or healthcare in their language, which is a barrier, or there's all kinds of things that really start to impact. The other thing I want to say is, I haven't seen the movie Menopause, but I can tell you, speaking for myself, one of the things that happened to me when I was in menopause was rage. I was raging for no particular reason, but I just felt rage all the time. It was non-identifiable, but it was there. And I didn't understand it. There was nobody to counsel me about it. See, And turns out I wasn't going crazy. But I think what happens, because whenever women act out of what these expectations are of politeness and, social acceptability, all of a sudden we're hysterical or we suffer from some kind of histrionics, right? And especially if we're raging or, outside of a box where, we're just not being nice and quiet about whatever it is. And so there's a lot of misunderstanding and there's a lot of sort of misappropriation, I guess, of, how we might be showing up in the world and how that becomes identified as something that's like, oh, she's just being whatever because that's the way that women are, which is completely unhelpful and shallow, and it doesn't understand anything about the circumstances and the realities that we're living.
Absolutely. Yeah. Since you use this word crazy, that reminds me of Shakespeare's plays when there have been witches, the women who have been the witches. And I think since that time till now, the women have been the craziest witches, I would say, because the women that were made to play the role of witches in those plays were actually the aging women of that time. So I think there was a dearth of talk about obviously menopause at that time in history, going back to history also. So this crazy witches, just weird. These terms have become synonyms with the aging women, actually. So that's really the sad part of the story, that things haven't changed since the Shakespearean time till date. And we are passing on this legacy. This is why I feel that it's very, very important that we let the men, as you say, handle these emotions for us and for themselves. Because without them understanding what we are going through, it doesn't make a point. So I come back to the same thing, that talking and letting people, especially the men in your household, which reminds me of my husband, if I could put that anecdote in right now. When I told him that I'm visiting a gynecologist for this menopause and to get some advice about perimenopause and how I'm going to transition into the menopause. So he was like, I don't know. I haven't heard about these things from my mother or my aunts. How did those ladies go through this phase without even talking about it? So I think all these things made a good case for me to go into the depth, to delve into the depth, why there was so much stigma, tabooing, silence about this topic in our communities for a long, long time. And I don't want this to continue. So my concern is let people talk about it, let people know about it, let people listen about it. Because when you see women talking amongst themselves, which I'm trying to do with my NGO, also trying to arrange a workshop on menopause, to talk, women get to talk together in a group, maybe in a public sphere or in a private sphere. And when they come to know, I was really
Really, I myself felt that I was not exposed to all the symptoms of perimenopause. I didn't know that I was having a bad hair fall when I was here in Canada for the first time. I thought it's maybe the change of season, maybe the water is doesn't suit me. So all kind of things and myths I have about my hair fall. I didn't know that was a symptom of perimenopause, and I'm sure many women don't know all the symptoms that are bothering them at this age in their life. So I think talking about it is the very first step that we can move towards in removing the stigma and the stigmatization of women on this issue. So my bad.
No, don't worry about
Yeah.
it. Also, like, if I can just like problematize, no, you said you guys were like doing the great thing that you guys were doing. That this is amazing. I just sort of thought about how the political economy of things also play into the stigmatization of the aging body, because there's a lot of products out there which make the skin glow and tight. There's Gua Sha. There's so many different things I don't even know. There's like different like standards to look up to and work up to and buy products to attain every single day, that it's really hard to even think about your own identity when you encounter those things, because the political economy of the things around us, the advertisements, for example, the movies that I was talking about, they are so focused on like pushing the products onto so pushing the products onto the audiences, that they think that perhaps that the aging body
It's the
is
commodification,
yeah it's
actually.
yeah
It's the,
commodification
yeah.
of the young body, and then the older body can just be left out of the discussion, which is something that is very revealing about how ageism functions in the way media production works and how ads are being produced and being put.
Yeah, definitely. I think since time immemorial, I would say I was reading this Michel Foucault's book on the history of sexuality. There has been a construction of the culturally defined terms specifically related to the domesticated subjects, as I may say, about sex, about women health, about pregnancy, about the bodies of women. There has been a social construct, as Robin was rightly saying, that people they feel that women should not be angry. They should behave in a certain manner. They should be like polite. Why are they raged? Why are they enraged, right? So they have some expectations for women. Women should always be polite and always be good looking and smiling around in the house, and she is like the soul of the house, maintaining the bond within the family and maintaining the happiness within the family, even though she is going through a lot herself. So I think it's time to be realistic about the expectations of it. Come on, we are a human being too. So yeah, give us a break. We too have bad days, rainy days. So we need time and space too. Talking about Foucault's book, the construction part of it, I'm amazed by it, how this has been imbibed into our minds. It has been culturally constructed into our minds that these are the things that you should be talking about, these are the things that you should be doing, and whole lot of paraphernalia, I would say, of do's and don'ts that we have specifically for women. So I particularly don't agree with this fact that women should be modeled all the time to do and behave in society. So I think that makes sense that we should be talking about our bad days too. And this is a long run. Menopause is a long run. This is not a small race. This is a long run. Mostly it is for 10 years, 9 years, 8 years for people. And I think without talking about it, without letting your family know about it, your kids and your husband and people around knowing about it, I don't know what's hideous about it. So yeah,
Absolutely.
we should be talking about it, normalizing it into our lives. This is just a phase of life. We may be having sagging skin or dryness or whatever, but still we are the same old people that were there who were a few years younger, and we did all the things that we did. So yeah.
Absolutely. The social construction of the body to make it a commodity has been a work that has been an ongoing project. And it's so interesting that you brought that up, because it is the social cultural construction of how the aging body should look like or not look like, and how should one's menopause look like or not look like. So all these conditioning is actually also a product of the social cultural domains, which is, yeah. Were you gonna say something, Robin? Or
I think one of the biggest examples of what we're talking about is hair dye.
Yeah.
And gray hair. It's so ubiquitous in terms of we don't even think about it, and yet there's so much pressure for especially women who, might have gray hair at a young age, and for women who are older who also don't want their employers to not renew their contract or, anything. Just, talking about the political economy and how it affects, women in this age bracket. And that we just can't show up as our natural selves, right? We need to be plumped and dark haired and with all of the lipos and Botoxes and all of these augmentations that equally true for young women are being pushed in a different way. But to keep up that standardization of, what that is supposed to quote unquote look like.
Yeah, absolutely. I also feel like I should be giving the floor to you guys to talk more, and I should like shut up a little bit, because we're almost towards sort of towards the end of the time that we have today. I don't know. Do you guys want to talk about, except from the information piece, because I think there is a lot of value in providing the information, but just the information in itself is incomplete. So, can we suggest any things to think about for our viewers to also not only take away from the session, but also how can we undo the stigmatization of menopausal and aging women?
Yeah, I think we should first of all try to remove the medical gaslighting. That is I think the denial of the condition, as if there is nothing to advise about it. It just happens, just like your periods every month, and it's gonna happen anyways, whether you are okay with it or you are not okay with it. So I think that kind of medical gaslighting has to be removed. Then obviously the shaming that we were talking about, shaming the women who are reaching out to the doctors maybe, or the physicians, or reaching out to their family, their partners, their husbands about it. Or maybe they are talking on platforms, various digital platforms. I think we should be more empathetic about these topics and let women talk about it and be positive and more compassionate about these topics. Although I really fail to see that in the near future, that the digital space that these women have got is actually a free medium for them to express. Obviously, there's a whole capitalism that is behind these digital platforms that we have. There's a platform economy that we have. If you put out yourself out there, you are bound to have some kind of humiliation, some kind of shame that you talk about it. There are going to be hate comments about it. Some people may try to portray you as somebody who is alien and alienated. There would be identity crisis that people feel that, oh my God, what she's talking about, I don't want to hear about this stuff. She is like having her bad day, and why she's talking about it to all the other people around her. So that kind of stigma has to go. It has to be dismantled in any form. And today has been, I think, a great one step. I would say my takeaway is that this kind of talk, engaging people on platforms wherever they can. I have written a piece not about aging women in a local newspaper back in my country that's published today. So we need to give space and time to women to come out and speak about it. So it's a me too menopausal. That's the takeaway from me. We need to run this hashtag more.
No, absolutely. If the economy of the platform will allow us to do that. And I'll just quickly mention that thank you for bringing up social media into it, because social media has been such an interesting space with like all the body positivity quotes and like posts and like hashtag bad hair day sayings. And then it's particularly interesting how, like,
Love your body.
yeah, love your body and all
I'm a
those.
girl. So all kind of things have been going on, but the backlash has been tremendous too. So we need to put out ourselves, reach out, and still do the things that we really want to talk about that matter to us.
Absolutely. Do you have any final thoughts, Robin? And then.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think there's a lot of, with stigmatization, there comes this reticence to be public about it. And I don't think that you have to be particularly public about these conversations, and that it's important to have those conversations with the people that you are comfortable with. Talk to your friends, share with your circle of close women folks about what your experience is, and destigmatize and desilence where those spaces are available to you, because those ripple out and they make a difference. Not everybody's going to show up on social media or on a public platform and feel comfortable about sharing their experience or their ideas, and that's fine. But those conversations that are held in living rooms and over coffee, cups of coffee, and those kinds of things can be equally as powerful to normalize and just like have the light bulb go on that, this isn't something that they need to, start to really have anxiety and panic attacks about. So, and then certainly, spaces like this are wonderful, but it doesn't have to be this big in order to shift.
Every step that we make in our family also is a step towards this direction.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Robin, and Jocelyn for this important conversation.
Thank you for having me to talk about this topic. Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Pranjali.
Yeah, thank you. Well,
Thank you.
it was great to have you. Now I also have someone else who's gonna do a little plug about something else that is happening important on campus, which is related to sustainability here. And I will let my other folks leave.
We actually also have a very special guest with us today, and it is actually Julia. So, Julia, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm a master student in the Communication for Social Change program, and the cool thing about our program is that we finalize a final project instead of a master thesis that is connected to our research. And my research focus was very much on the question how we can engage young people to get engaged in sustainability and to also stay engaged long term. I chose this topic because my own experience in the climate movement and with Greenpeace was that it can be sometimes really, really draining and difficult to engage with climate change and all these topics. And I wanted to create something for students where they can find new inspiration and hope and a feeling of self-efficiency. And I think it's really crucial that we have an image of a positive future in mind, where we want to go. And I think it's similar like throwing a ball. If you throw a ball, you also want to look in the direction where you want to throw the ball and not the opposite direction. And so often, climate change and the whole communication around it is so much about loss and grief and all the things that we can't do anymore. But there are also so many cool things that we can do that contribute to a sustainable future. And my focus groups that are happening, you can envision them as a mental gym for your imagination, how the university of the future might look like. So it's a little time travel together with other interdisciplinary students, and also the SFU sustainability team will be there to witness students' dreams and visions for the future and how they can help you to prone these skills and become the most efficient and strongest change agent for sustainability. You will also get a free vegetarian meal and have the chance to connect with other interdisciplinary students. There will be many creative, fun activities. So I promise not a draining climate change experience, but an inspiring one for you.
Thank you so much, Julia, for putting this together. How can our listeners register for this?
You
And
can.
where should we come for this?
Yes, you can register online. There's an Eventbrite page, and it's happening at the 30th and 31st of October here on Burnaby Campus.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you guys for listening and tuning in to Intravenous. Up next, Democracy Now!
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Earlier this year, wildfires raged near the town of Ruidoso, New Mexico, destroying more than 1,000 buildings and killing 2 people. Within a few weeks, the fires had been contained, but then came the rain. Over the next few weeks, rain repeatedly poured down on the recently burned forest. The water rushed off the charred landscape, flooding the town and causing even more damage and danger to residents. Floods and mudslides can be common after wildfires. Wildfires destroy vegetation and coat the soil with a waxy surface, preventing water from seeping into the ground and increasing runoff. So when rain hits a burn scar, that water can quickly rush downhill while picking up dirt and debris, creating dangerous floods within mere minutes. This increased flood risk can last 5 years or more after a wildfire, until the forest has had a chance to regrow. In many areas, climate change is making wildfires more common and intense. So experts suggest that people living in wildfire-prone areas purchase flood insurance. And before disaster strikes, residents should study evacuation routes and pack a go bag to help them stay safe when wildfires and flooding threaten their homes. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.